Brace the rudders! Raise the sails! Raise the sails!
Captain, an unidentified ship is approaching. Over.
Roger. Wait, is that an Enterprise sales solution?
Reach sales professionals, not professional sailors. With LinkedIn ads, you can target the right people by industry, job title, and more. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next campaign. Get started today at linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply.
With a Venmo debit card, you can Venmo more than just your friends. You can use your balance in so many ways. You can Venmo everything. Need gas? You can Venmo this. How about snacks? You can Venmo that. Your favorite band's merch? You can Venmo this. Or their next show? You can Venmo that. Visit Venmo.me/debit to learn more.
You can Venmo this, or you can Venmo that. You can Venmo this, or you can Venmo that.
The Venmo MasterCard is issued by the Bancorp Bank N.A. pursuant to license by MasterCard International Incorporated. Card may be used everywhere MasterCard is accepted. Venmo purchase restrictions apply.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Tech Entrepreneur on a Mission podcast. My name is Ton Dobbe, and I'm the founder of Value Inspiration and the author of The Remarkable Effect. I envision a world where every B2B SaaS startup succeeds because they're creating software that customers would miss if they were gone. And here's why. Research consistently shows that 90% of all startups fail, and that's bad. What's worse, however, is that 75% of SaaS scale-ups fail, companies that are supposed to have product market fit. Far too few scale-ups create the traction they aspire for and fail for the wrong reasons. And I believe this should stop, and hence I created my business. And the goal that I have with this podcast is twofold. First, to inspire new forms of value creation by sharing compelling ideas and stories about the potential that we can unlock when technology and people blend in the right way. Secondly, share experiences from tech entrepreneurs like you about what it requires to create a remarkable software business and how to overcome the roadblocks to do so. The guest of our podcast this week is Aytekin Tunk, founder and CEO of Jotform.
Being a founder means like it's not just about like leading a team, coaching a team, managing a team, but it's also about improving myself, growing, you know, myself.
Yeah.
Because being a founder is about like growth. It's about growth mindset. It's about growing yourself with the company. It's about growing your company. And it requires some, you know, dedication to growing knowledge and learning.
This is Aytekin. He founded Jotform in 2006. Creating a pioneering WYSIWYG online form builder that has grown to serve over 25 million users worldwide today. What's remarkable is that he bootstrapped the company from the ground up. This allowed Jotform to remain 100% independent and define their own rules and company culture as it grew. Under his leadership, Jotform has experienced impressive international growth, with offices in 7 different cities around the world. Their growth and style were recognized as Jotform was named one of the best privately owned companies in America by Entrepreneurs Magazine. Aytekin is not just a successful entrepreneur, but also an automation enthusiast. He recently published a book titled Automate Your Busy Work, and his book shares his insights on the automation philosophy that he applied to grow Jotform. And this inspired me, and hence I invited Aytekin to my podcast. We explore his biggest lessons learned from bootstrapping a form-building tool to a leading global company with 25 million users. He elaborates on his approach around continuous innovation and maintaining momentum, rather than worrying about competitors. And he shares his insights on prioritizing product development and growth. Last but not least, he talks about how he recently gave new meaning to his founder role and why every SaaS entrepreneur should do that. By listening to this podcast, you will learn 4 things. Firstly, how he's working with customers to ensure Jotform's success. Secondly, his first principle for managing growth and avoiding getting bogged down in busy work. Thirdly, how he's organized his development teams and their rituals to ensure momentum on the one hand and optimal alignment on the other hand. And lastly, how he approached competition from Google Forms to come out stronger themselves. Well, hi, Aytekin. Thank you for making the time available today and being the guest on my podcast.
Hey, Tan. Good to be on your show.
Well, yeah, that's it's a pleasure because, I mean, I've been in the software industry for a long time, and I've known JotForm for a long time. So it's actually an honor to have you on the show here and to go through the whole growth journey that you've been leading since 2006. Impressive journey. So I got a lot of questions. Before starting talking about your company and how this journey all evolved, what drives you? What gives you energy as a tech leader?
I think I see myself as a product person. I enjoy working on our products. I enjoy like seeing people use our products and watching them use our products and learning from them and improving our products. This just makes me so happy. And I'm so lucky that like we have 25 million users. And anytime we have an idea to kind of develop something new, like we can just release it to like a very small number of users, like 1% of our users. And, you know, they will try it and we'll see if they like it and we'll get their feedback. And it's an amazing way to develop products. Because it's just, I don't believe that you can develop products in silence. You need actually that feedback. You need people using your product, but you need to be seeking that. But it's very easy to just ignore people, how they use it. But it's just like these days, there are like so many tools that you can use to kind of be aware of how people use your product. And that product excites me so much.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I found in like studying you and seeing the journey. I mean, you started as a developer, you know, and also on your own website, like developer by trade, storyteller by heart. That thing will never go away. And I think about it the same way. But I particularly like how you're saying it. It's not how people grow with your product, but seeing how people actually use your product and experiencing that, and studying that, and see how you can make a difference for them. So if that gives the energy, I mean, I think it's a perfect bridge to start talking about your company. You founded it, as far as I could figure out, in 2006. What was the big idea behind the company, or what was maybe the problem that you saw that was screaming for a solution like yours?
So before I started JotForm, I was working for a media company in New York. Mm-hmm. And I worked there for 5 years. And I was a developer, individual contributor. And like we had like over 100 websites. It was actually called internet.com. So we had all these like technology websites. And we had all these editors. And they would constantly come to me and they would ask me to build forms for them. So I would build like, you know, surveys, contact forms, questionnaires, contest registration forms, like payment forms, all kinds of forms. Like they needed all these forms, but I kind of hated it. I hated it because it was just, it was very easy. Like it was very boring, kind of like just HTML. Like just like I wanted to work on more like exciting stuff instead of building forms. But there was like this constant stream of requests for me to build forms. So I was actually looking for like a product that I could use so that I didn't have to like build them myself, but I couldn't find one. And that's when I knew that this is a really good product idea because a lot of people need this. And, but you know, there is no like good products. Like there was SurveyMonkey, but that was only for building surveys. And the number of forms, you know, our editors needed were just like, you know, 10 times or, you know, more than 20 times than just surveys, like just a different variety of forms. So I quit my job 2005 summer, and I started working on JotForm. And I worked on it for over 6 months. And in February 2006, I released JotForm. And that was the start, like just me by myself and starting building a product. And I wanted a lot of people to use it. I told myself that even if this product fails, I should get a lot of people to use it because like just make sure that I'm not failing because, you know, they're not really seeing, like this is a good product. This is like a very first kind of examples of how you can actually build a product on a, you know, web page. Like in the past, like all the software existed, like you or you install them on your operating system, like on your computer, right? You would go install it on your Windows or Mac, and you would use software like that. And then, and I think it was 2004, Gmail came out. And then suddenly everybody started talking about, wow, you can actually build products on the browser. There were other products as well, like before, but they weren't that as famous as Gmail. Yeah. So like people started thinking about like single page apps, instant edit, like drag and drop on the browser, like using JavaScript to communicate with the servers. So all those things like became very popular, but there weren't many examples. So actually, that was actually my initial PR approach when I released JotForm. I kind of emailed all these different tech sites saying like, hey, look at my website, like my product, you know, I am actually like, this is a great example of like one page apps. And I didn't even put like a sign up or anything, just put my product on the homepage. Like when you went to JotForm.com in 2006, you saw the form builder. Like there was no sign up or there was no landing page. You saw the JotForm form builder. You could just drag and draw fields into it. You could play with the settings, customize it. And then only when you needed to like, you know, set up emails or anything, like you had to sign up. So that was also, that made it easy for people to share it and try it and see it's good. And that initial PR approach actually worked. And I started getting more and more signups. And for the first year, it was all free. Like there was no like paid version. But a year later in 2007, I also released the premium version and the rest is history. Yeah.
So how many users did you already have in 2007?
So I had like 15,000 users and 500 of them actually upgraded to the paid version, premium version. It was only like $9 a month. It wasn't much, but it was, you know, I was just this single person. I actually hired my first employee by that point. So in the first years, like this is a SaaS product. So it takes very long time to, and I'm bootstrapped, right? There is no investment. Exactly. I never received investment. I've been bootstrapped all these 18 years. So it was very slow growth in the beginning, right? The first year I hired my first employee, second year, second, like the first 5 years, I only hired like one employee, like just 5 employees by the end of fifth year. So it was very, very slow growth in the beginning. And I think that's also inspirational. Like today we have like over 600 employees, 25 million users, offices around the world in 7 different cities. And like when I talk to like startup founders who are like just saying, hey, I've been, you know, doing this for the 4 years, but I'm only like, you know, this big. And I tell them like, I was actually behind you. Like I wasn't this big by the time in the fourth year. So you can actually become much more successful than JotForm. And I think that's a great inspirational story for founders. Yeah,
it is. Exactly. But it shows again that, yeah, there is no such thing as overnight success. It builds and it builds and it builds. And so looking back at the last 18 years, what has been an early decision that you took at some point that has been fundamental to where you are right now?
So I think one of the problems small businesses or like small startups have is like the founder actually having to do everything, right? Like, you know, doing like so many busy work. So I think a few years into JotForm, here I was like buried under busy work. Like I was just doing everything. I was doing support from morning to night. I was like answering emails and like I was, you know, also managing the team. I was doing accounting, legal, HR, you know, ordering supplies for the office. I was doing everything. And right at that point, actually, a big competitor showed up. Google actually came out with a competitive product. Yeah. So here I am, like I'm not feeling like I'm advancing my product as much as I should. I feel like I'm getting stuck under busy work. Mm-hmm. And here, like Google, like the biggest company in the world, is actually like launching a product that's competing with us, like Google Forms. Yeah. So that was actually a point for me to make a decision, right? So I decided that, you know, I'm a programmer by trade. So I'm a developer by trade. I know automation, right? That's my skill. So I decided that I'm gonna like use automation and delegation to free myself from all these day-to-day tasks so that I can actually spend my time with more important things. So I started automating, for example, the way I process my emails. Like I was getting lost in emails. I devised this automation solution to be able to like process my emails much quickly, just prioritize my email much better so that I can, you know, deal with the important things and I don't have to worry about the unimportant things. So I also I went to like Upwork and hired like, you know, 5 supporters around the world, and they took over the support from me. I enjoyed support, but like I enjoyed like doing customer support, and because I learned so much from the customers. But at this point, like I just learned too much. Like just I was spending too much time just answering the same questions. Like it wasn't actually giving me any additional information about how people use JotForm. So using automation and delegation, I was able to take the control, like just start working on my product, improving the product and growing the company as well. Like just, you know, I have this rule that I call 50-50 rule. And it's like, you know, as a startup founder, you should be spending half of your time with product and half of your time with growth, you know, because you could have this great product. But if no one is using it, like you're not learning from the users and you're not growing your product. So it's like, you know, it's kind of you don't have any momentum. You're not building a user base. But if you are really good at marketing and sales, bringing lots of people, and I've seen like I mentored startups where like, you know, this person is really good at SEO, bringing lots of traffic, or really good at sales, like constantly bringing all these big clients. But then what's happening is that like 3 months later, they're all gone. Like because the product is not there, there's no product market fit. There's no like good product that, you know, sticky product that people stay. So you have to keep that like 50-50 rule.
Let me make a small interruption here. Aitekin just made an excellent remark about what's required to create products that people start talking about and keep talking about. It starts with an initial product and a first user that's prepared to take a bet and grow with you. But then it's about a constant loop of feedback, adjust, ship, and find the next perfect fit customer for which your product gives them a hell yes reaction. It's a trait remarkable software companies master. They acknowledge they cannot please everyone. Then, relentlessly focus on the essence. With that, create new value possibilities and master the art of creating momentum. And you can master these traits as well. The first step? Simply read my book. I've made the electronic version available for free. Just visit theremarkableeffect.com to grab your copy, and inspiration will spark within 10 minutes. Back to the interview.
And at some point, if you feel like one area is weak, you have to focus on that area. So it doesn't mean like, you know, every day, like you have to work like 4 hours on product. Sure. It's more about like, how do I spend like this year? Like do I spend it more on product or growth? And just like working on the product, working on the growth of the product, and just making sure that I'm really prioritizing my time, spending my time on the important things, and automating and delegating everything else is actually gave me the time so that, like, you know, we became successful. And I learned so much from that. So I learned about automation myself, and I started kind of like applying all these principles to the way we do in our business, like in our product development, for example, you know, continuous integration and deployment, for example, applying those principles to our product development. I also started kind of using automation within our product as well. So what I discovered was, you know, in the beginning, I thought that my product was about forms, right? People needed forms. We gave them an easy way to create forms. But over time, I discovered that what people needed was not just forms, because like forms are just the first step in a journey, right? There is a business process, there is a workflow, like someone signs up using a form, someone like makes a request, someone pays for something, right? But that's just the first step. There are like next steps, right? And then we started thinking about like, how can we help people with the next steps? So we started kind of adding all these like automation features, like, you know, send emails by automatically, have these conditional logic, like so that, you know, the owners of the forms can kind of like program their forms to behave in certain ways. Like document generation, like they can create like PDF documents, like durable documents for the feature or to share with someone else. Like we started building all these additional products, like e-signature product, like we released JotForm Sign. We have this mobile app builder where you can actually put all your forms in a mobile app, or like you could also run it on a web browser, turn it into a portal and share it with your clients or customers. So we started building all these additional products as well for our users. Yes. And we continue to do that. And we just released JotForm Workflows. It's a product basically allows you to kind of starting with a form that you can actually, you know, do things like approvals. You can create tasks, assign them to someone else. You can create signatures. Like you can ask someone to approve and sign a document after that, you know, form is filled. Like you can build all these like, you know, multi-step flows from your form submission after you receive a form submission. So basically after I started applying all those automation principles to myself, to our team, to our company, and for our customers in our product, then I also decided to write a book about it. So last year I released Automate Your Busy Work, and it became a Wall Street Journal bestseller. And nice. If anybody wonders about that, they can go to my website, my first name, last name.com, itechintank.com, and they can actually read the first chapter for free. No signups required. Just read the first chapter. And if they like it, it's available on bookstores. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll make a note of that in the speaker notes of this podcast.
Okay.
But I saw that indeed. And that makes us two authors on the call. So in that, I mean, automated busy work, the first impression I had with that is, of course, I mean, there's so many things at the end that have been talked about automating busy work. I mean, I come from the ERP world, which is also, of course, about automating busy work for people. And it seems to be a topic that continues to grow in importance, where there, of course, are many, many tools available to do that these days. So what do you believe is the problem that people still end up with too much busy work?
Yeah, I think it's a problem of prioritization.
That is the case.
Because there's like there's no way to be done with the work. Like there's just the work is always there. Like just keep coming at us. Like constantly we have work coming at us. And so for example, like in my company, like I create so much work for the team, right? I'm just so excited about the product, for example. And then like we will just start discussing ideas, and then just we are creating like so much work for ourselves. So it's important that we prioritize those ideas. It's important that we make sure that like when we work on something, like we get feedback from others as well, so that we know that like we are not just working on something because we think it's a good idea, but because it's really something people want. This is in terms of product. But in terms of our own work, I think it's about asking ourselves two questions. You know, and in the book, I talk about this tool that I recommend, and it's called Time Audit. And basically, you could create like this spreadsheet, and you could put like, you know, you could just record how you spend your time on it. And you can just put like, you know, for a week, like just, okay, I did this, you know, this hour. And then every top of the hour, like you just make a note of what you did. And at the end of the week, you total them up and you kind of see like how you are spending your time. Like you're spending your time on this project. You're spending your time on just answering useless emails, maybe, or maybe like important emails, like just maybe separate them out as well. Like just like maybe you're just spending too much unnecessary time on Twitter. So you want to make sure that you put all those things and then total them up. And you ask yourself two questions, like, what should I spend my time on? And what shouldn't I spend my time on? And I think the second question is more important. Because the time you spend on things that actually take away your time, take away your motivation, take away your energy, they're not just taking away your time, but they are actually taking away like just so much opportunities for you, because instead of doing all those busy work, instead of doing those boring work or like just unnecessary stuff or stuff that you do because like you feel like you have to do, you know, like watching the news, right? You know, watching the news, like you don't gain much, right? It's just, you feel like you have to watch the news sometimes, but you know, if you don't watch the news, nothing happens, right? You if something important happens, someone will come to you and tell you, oh, did you hear about that? And then you'll be aware of it. Like you don't have to watch the news so constantly, right? So there are like so many things like that, that like you really don't need to. Like, if you can kind of separate those two things, like things that actually give you more energy, things that like, you know, fill you up, fill your bucket, and things that actually drain your bucket, right? If you can separate them, what you want to do is like you want to get rid of those things that actually, you know, drain your bucket, and you want to, you know, fill your time with things that actually, you know, fill your bucket. And so you ask yourself those questions. So what do you do next? I think that's the same solution, like delegation, automation. And, you know, this is a great time to automate things because like there are just like so many tools available. Now the AI. Like we were just looking at today our traffic, and then like just ChatGPT is like, you know, like usually like when you look at like search engine traffic, like you see like Google, like Bing, you know, DuckDuckGo, right? We start seeing ChatGPT like, you know, as a like a big source of traffic because like so many people actually start using ChatGPT. And, you know, maybe it's not a good thing, but, you know, when we are doing homework with my kids, right, we are also using ChatGPT, ask questions to it. And when I'm thinking about something, I will just use ChatGPT, like just Notebook LM. I don't know if you tried that, a product from Google. Like you can just upload these documents and then it turns into a podcast. And like just, you know, instead of reading a document, I upload it and then it turns into a podcast. When I'm driving, I can actually listen to it. And I learn so much more that way. So there is just like so many things that I sometimes wish that I actually written that book later, because like all the examples in the book is like so old now. Like I could write that book right now, and a month from now, even the examples I just wrote, it would be old as well. Like just there's just so much happening right now, so much coming out every day. It's a great time to automate. But also, I mean, in the book, the principles, the automation principles, the ideas in the book, main, you know, principles still apply, but the examples are pretty old now
That's at the end. Yeah. That's what it's about, right? It's about the first principles that you apply here. And, I mean, if I look at my book, it came out in 2020, 4 years ago. Yes, there are examples of software companies that are still thriving. There's also a couple of them that have gone out of business. But I think the principles in the book will still be relevant 10, 20, 30 years from now. And I think that's the art of writing a good book. Talking about that, you know, you mentioned a couple of things happening at some point in the trajectory of JotForm. First of all, of course, Google Forms coming to market. How you reacted to that, doing far more focus on the automation, kind of making sure that the focus of the company is right. Has that, I mean, at the end, there's more of those companies that came to market around the time that you started JotForm. But of course, there's still companies that think that this is the right time to become your competitor. What have you done differently to build defensible differentiation? Because, you know, you just said also with the tools available like ChatGPT and all the generative AI and agentic AI tools that are coming to market right now, it seems to be so easy to build in weeks or months that used to take years.
Yeah.
How do you go about that?
I think there is no like one single answer to that. You know what? I think it's about like this continuous focus. And like we had really good competitors. Like Wufoo, for example, was a competitive product. They also came out in 2006. They were amazing product. They were built by designers. Originally they were designers, and you know they were one of the first batches in Y Combinator. they had like, you know, 150,000 mailing lists with, you know, other designers. So they started so fast, like so much more stronger than us. Like in the beginning, it was only me. But what happened was like they actually built a great product as well. And I always think that having good competitors is a good thing because it's, you know, it keeps you always on your toes. Mm-hmm. It makes you like work harder. And what happened was like at some point they decided to exit, right? So what happened was the company was bought by SurveyMonkey. And, you know, when they were bought, the founders actually left the company and they started, you know, doing other things. And the, you know, the acquirer actually stopped innovating. And at some point, like, you know, they were so much ahead of us, but they, you know, started stagnating. They stayed in a straight line. The growth actually stopped. But our growth, you know, we continue to develop our products. We continue to improve our products. So I think it's about momentum. You know, I want to correct, like the first answer was, I said, it's not about like one thing. I think it's about one thing, which is momentum. Having this momentum, keeping this momentum is really important. You know, you could have this top competitor, but like if they stop, you know, building that momentum, at some point you can build the momentum and continue. So, and momentum is about focus, right? You have to have your focus because it's very easy to get distracted. We build other products. We definitely build other products. Like, you know, I was mentioning like JotForm Sign, you know, JotForm App Builder, like workflows, you know, all these additional products. But all of those products are kind of like additional features for JotForm because they are actually like complementary products for existing JotForm users. So we still see them like a part of JotForm, as opposed to like building a separate product and selling them separately. So they also contribute to JotForm because someone coming to, you know, use a JotForm Sign like document signature, like a DocuSign like product, is also like, you know, coming in and using JotForm. So it's also contributing, but many of the JotForm users also use e-signatures. Yeah. So basically we kept innovating. And one of the things I hear a lot from our customers is like, you know, when they review JotForm, they will write things like, it's like a very innovative like company. They are constantly announcing new products, new features. And I do that by having this strong product team. You know, the largest team in our company is products. And we have these small cross-functional teams. Like we have 15 to 20 product teams. And they're all responsible for different parts of the product or different products. And they're constantly working on improving the products, releasing new products. And like, you know, if you look at our newsletter, like we are constantly announcing new features, new products. And that also builds trust with our users. They know that like we are not like just doing something else. We are actually focused on improving the existing product. And that builds trust and we build momentum. And one of the things that I really enjoy at JotForm, being a JotFormer, is our demo days. So every Friday morning, we have this demo day where like, you know, all these different teams are just coming to the demo day and just they're like presenting what they have like released that week, what they have finished. You know, it doesn't have to be like just product team. It could be like a growth team releasing a landing page or something. They also present. But this kind of like allows everyone to be aware of what's happening in the company. But it's also like builds that feeling of momentum. Like, you know, the employees actually have that feeling that we are actually advancing. We are actually improving every day, every week. And that helps us get motivated to improve it even further.
I really like that idea. And I think it's doing it cross-functional, even if it's not coming from product, but for me, but maybe even from, for example, marketing. It's a really important thing to do because it gives a sense of pride and being able to contribute to something much bigger than what you do yourself. And suddenly the dot starts to connect in terms of, okay, hey, what I built here now has an impact there. So that's a really good thing. Yeah, your point about momentum is really one that I feel very strong about. I mean, in my book, The Remarkable Effect, I'm talking about three levers. The one is value. The other one is viability. And the last one is what I call volume, but that has to do with the first trait in that line is momentum, creating momentum. That's a big underestimated thing. And as like you say, it doesn't stop when you create the first momentum in the company. It always needs to continue. And a lot of companies start to have that complacency disease almost in the company that they say, yeah, we're doing fine, you know? And then they think they can take it easy. But that's where it hurts you. So yeah, kudos for doing that. I mean, talking about that growth trajectory, because like you say, 25 million users coming from 15,000 to 2007. First of all, it proves that there's value in the product. It proves that it's sticky. How do you deal with this big thing in the product-led growth world called churn? How do you avoid that the churn doesn't go the wrong direction? Because at the end, in product-led growth, people come to a website and they can actually sign up with a credit card and then they're your customer. There's hardly anything you can do like sales-wise by saying, no, but we're qualifying out because it's not for you. How does that work?
I mean, there is just some churn that you cannot prevent. Like, you know, companies going out of business, companies, you know, not needing your product anymore. Things like that happen. You know, sometimes like the people will need forms for a very short time. So there is always that kind of churn, but that's okay. But if you cannot actually onboard the users, like because like if they cannot figure out how to use your product in the beginning, that's a big concern. Or if you know your product is buggy, or if your product is not stable, you know, if there are problems like that, that's also a you know big concern. So so how do you prevent churn? I think the way to prevent churn that way, like that concern and type of churn, is kind of be aware of what's happening in your product. If you think about it, it's very simple. Like just kind of interview customers. Like that's what we do. We have user researchers who are talking to customers who also talk to like churned users as well. And especially like if someone is using our product a lot and then they suddenly stop using, right? That's something that we want to try to figure out. And so like, you know, there are tools like FullStory where you can actually see if you are actually, you know, people are able to use your product, if you are able to onboard them. And so like there are products like user testing. So we use that a lot as well, that you can actually give your product to user testing and just they have the audience and you tell them, okay, use this product, you know, create a, for example, event registration form. Right. And then, you know, we watch what's happening and they try to use the product, where they fail, what they don't understand, what kind of task they fail at. So I think it's about we redesigned JotForm, like we rewritten our form builder like four times. The current form builder is like JotForm 4.0. The first form builder was only written by me. And the fourth form builder, I don't think I wrote a single line of code. So, and I think after that point, like we started kind of like just rewriting, like we made it more modular. We never needed like a rewrite, but we have rewritten features from scratch as well. It's, you know, if they don't work out. So I think it's still about the focus, like teams focusing on their own products, making sure that they take care of bugs and just fix those bugs and just, you know, it's not just about like, you know, total number of bugs, like the bug creation rate, right? We look at that and we try to reduce the bug creation rate. Like in one, if there is one area of, and when you have like millions of users, you get bugs. Like there's no way like people find bugs. Like there is just like so many ways that bugs happen and they find ways to, like, and the goal is to kind of, reduce the bug creation rate in your product, and that's also like requires attention to that part of the product. But like really, it's about understanding the customers, you know, spending time figuring out like what they need. So, for example, sometimes you need to build features. It's not just about problems, right? People leave your product for another product because that product actually has different features. or maybe it has a better design, maybe it's easier to use, or maybe it has the features that your product is missing. So figuring that out is also important to be able to keep people. It's just like, you know, continuous improvement. If you build that momentum, if you continuously improve your product, the churn keeps getting smaller and smaller. But you will never make it zero because...
No, I understand that.
Yeah.
So do you see, by the way, that, I mean, of course, JotForm is maybe the ultimate example of an horizontal product that virtually everybody can use, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's almost like prove me that you don't, that there's no reason for you to use it. Do you see that certain groups of users get more value out of this, or it's more critical for them to use it? And have you kind of done anything on that with regards to your go-to-market focus?
Yeah. I mean, JotForm is an automation product because if you think about it, like, how can forms be an automation product? Forms are an automation product because you automate the communication, right? So you're working with other people. You are actually helping other people. And when you do that, they need to kind of make requests from you or they need to apply for things. So that's why, like, JotForm's biggest industries are healthcare, education, and nonprofits. Because in these industries, there's like just so much communication happening. And so, for example, in education, you have students, teachers, parents, like, you know, other administrators, right? You are actually dealing with a lot of other people and you have to communicate with them. Like, you know, people apply for something, people make a request. So the forms are used a lot when it involves like the workflows involve also people. And small business as well. Like small businesses, like they have very small resources and forms kind of allow them to accomplish more, like serve more clients or customers using forms, like save time and just, you know, take care of stuff, like instead of just doing everything manually. Yeah.
I like what you say there. And it's interesting how sort of, yeah, the bulk of your user group all end up sort of in the public sector domain, or at least domain that's non-commercial. And possibly that is indeed where the most communication takes place. And it has to be done in a way that is very cost-effective, where for other companies that can be done in different ways. So two more questions here. When it comes to, I wrote my book, The Remarkable Effect, which is, that kind of, when companies create something that users find worth making a remark about, you're doing something right. Is there anything in your company where, for example, through those demo days that you talked about earlier on, where you inspire your people that what they create needs to have an effect of, remarkability? And if so, what?
Right now, we are involved with this project, JotForm AI, and we've been working on it for a year. And it feels like that's really remarkable because it's just making things like just AI allows people to save so much time. Mm-hmm. And kind of it helps people replace forms with AI. And if you think about it, forms are kind of boring, and they're not very smart. They cannot answer your questions. But AI is actually more like just, you know, it can have a personality. It can be fun. It can answer your questions. It can still take your questions, take your answers to the questions on the form. There's just like so many possibilities with AI. So I think it's about making it reliable. Making it more remarkable. It's kind of about like, you know, building things by understanding user needs. And because like, if you can understand what people need really well, then you will come up with all these creative ideas. You will be able to build these remarkable features, products, because you will find a solution. And it's very hard to come up with solutions, like just thinking about, you know, you just sit down and think about how can I, you know, build a solution. That doesn't work. Like great solutions, great remarkable solutions come out because like you are actually involved with this very difficult problem and you have to find a really good solution for it. Like, for example, in our company, we have another tradition. I was talking about the demo days. This one is like the hack weeks. So in the early days, like when we were struggling with something, we would actually do like a hackathon. But then I decided like, okay, I don't want my employees to stay all night. Like that's, you know, that's good for the kids, but you know, they are professional employees. Like, you know, they should go home to their families at, you know, 5 p.m. So we decided, okay, we are not gonna, you know, stay until late. We are just gonna do hackathons all over a week. So we started doing hack weeks. We turned them into a week long hackathons. People still do stay late, especially like, you know, hackathons usually end on Friday. So you will see people stay at the office like very late hours on Thursday night. So I couldn't prevent that. But like that actually allowed us to come up with remarkable solutions. So we also have design weeks. So we have a lot of these product designers at JotForm. And because we have all these cross-functional teams, all of our product teams actually have like designers. So we have very high number of designers at JotForm, product designers. You know, we probably have like over 20 product designers. And you know, whenever we get stuck with a problem, whenever we need like this creative solution to solve this tough problem, we'll just do this design week. We'll just let our designers try different ideas and come up with solutions. And usually, like one designer will come up with this remarkable solution that no one actually thought about. And it's not the same designer. It's always a different designer. Usually someone who actually thought about that product, that those features a lot in the past, come up with those ideas. So I think prior experience, knowledge is important, but you have to have this like really big problem, big hair problem. Prior experience, knowing the background, knowing the problems, knowing the general problems. And also, if you join that with a, you know, important problem, like just a problem that you cannot find an easy solution, then those creative, remarkable ideas come out. And I think that's our solution. The design weeks, the hack weeks allows us to come up with all these remarkable product ideas.
Yeah, I think there's a sort of a pattern here that I'm seeing is that the typical moments where you come up with those ideas that actually are worth making a remark about is when you step back as a group and start working as a group cross-functional and bring in all the diversity of the company, sort of empowering the teams to bring out the best possible rather than just like putting it on the desk of one individual and see deal with it. Is that correct?
And one thing about like those hack weeks and design, like, so for example, you are working on a product that's being used by millions of people, right? You're kind of scared. Like you don't want to mess it up too much, right? But I always have this belief that you should have some calls and then you should like, you know, fix those calls. Like you should have clarity calls, right? Just you need to build some calls so that you can fix it later. Otherwise, like it's not, you cannot innovate if you are just very careful about like not to break anything. But kind of hack weeks and design weeks are like those like time-boxed environments where you can actually do anything you want. Like you're not going to mess up the product because no one is going to use the, you know, the design or the, you know, hack you did. It's just an experiment. You are just doing that experiment for a week and then you'll just throw away that code or that design. So you don't have those like preconditions. You're not worried about like messing things up for customers. Then you can actually come up with creative ideas. And I think that's also an important factor to make sure that you keep people those like creative, like sandboxes so that they can come up with these remarkable ideas.
Exactly. Yeah. Stepping away and being able to do things without actually taking into account, okay, what did we do before? It's typically the whole idea of, okay, if we could do it again and we had no history around this, how would we do it today? Yeah. I like that. Last question then. I mean, based on the 18 years of starting the company, running the company, and bringing to the growth that you've created up to this year, 2024, what would be What is a lesson that you've learned over time that still stays with you as something that you keep coming back to? Because I'm not going to ask you for one lesson to share here. It's like, what is the thing that has become a principle for you?
So do you remember I was talking about this, you know, this problem I had like with busy work? I was talking about that story in the early days, Google Forms came out, and then, you know, I got rid of the busy work and I was able to actually spend my time on the important things. But over time, actually, that came back to me, right? A few years back, this just like, I started feeling like this overqualified, you know, administrator. I was like this administrator. Like I was like doing all these meetings, like one, you know, I was involved in these meetings about offices, you know, administrative meetings, like finance, like all these different things. And I wasn't like, you know, I wasn't doing a lot of work individually. I was a manager, right? I was delegating all the work, but I was still involved with like too many things. And that was also like, you know, okay, I'm making the exact same mistake again. I'm not doing the exact same mistake, but I'm making a very similar mistake. And in this case, like automation and delegation is not helping me. And I started thinking about like what I enjoy most. And I started thinking about my titles. And I became this very efficient CEO. I was involved with everything. I was, you know, doing a good job as a CEO. But when I look at my signature, my title is founder and CEO. So, and I was thinking about this, like, first off of my title, like, I'm a founder, right? And I wasn't being a founder when I was like involved with everything, just being approving things, like giving people ideas, like coaching everyone. That's great. That's, you know, being a CEO is great and important, but I wasn't being a founder. And I started thinking like the founder title, the founder position is not something you can hire, right? It's not something you can bring into the company. It's something very unique. And I thought that I stopped being a founder. And I thought that the founder title is about the past. Like I founded the company and that's like, you know, I have it in my title because of that. But that's not really the, I thought that wasn't true. Like founder title can be about the future. I can actually be the founder of future JotForm. I can be the founder of the future product, feature team, like feature culture of our team. Like I can build a new culture, new products, like just rebuild our products. I can, you know, and right now, like that's what I'm doing. So I decided, okay, I'm gonna actually delegate everything. I guess like I still use that delegation. I'm gonna delegate everything to our executives, our executive team, our VPs, and to my COO, and I'm just gonna focus on like two things. And I found those things by asking two questions, like what's the biggest opportunity for JotForm and what's the biggest problem for JotForm, right? What's the biggest bottleneck for JotForm? So right now I'm involved with like two things only, and I just leave everything else to our executives and just, I tell them, I trust your decisions. I leave them to our COO, who's actually doing all the one-on-ones or like with the executive team as well. Like just, I'm just doing two things. The first one is like this new product, JotForm AI. Just I'm leading like over like 15 teams are working on this new product and just focus on that. Usually like Mondays and Wednesdays, I'm just focused on JotForm AI. And it's a product that's gonna come out in 2025. We don't have it yet. And Tuesdays and Thursdays, I'm actually focused on the, like what's the biggest bottleneck for our future growth, which is like the enterprise product. Like we have been this SaaS service product, now we have an enterprise product. So I'm actually like, how can we, you know, grow our enterprise products? Just focus on that, working with the teams that actually grow our enterprise product. And so being a founder means like it's not just about like leading a team, coaching a team, managing a team, but it's also about improving myself, growing myself. Like I'm constantly, you know, watching things about like either like, you know, Suster or all this enterprise related stuff, and also about all these AI related stuff. So I'm constantly, you know, reading the books, watching the YouTube videos. So constantly growing myself in those areas.
Yeah.
Because being a founder is about like growth. It's about growth mindset. It's about growing yourself with the company. It's about growing your company. And it requires some, you know, dedication to that, to growing knowledge and learning.
Love that. Love that. I mean, yeah, that's exactly, a lot of companies, a lot of people forget that. And they just think the title is the title. But you're so right. You know, at some point, if the company doesn't get the value of the founder CEO anymore, then you're doing the wrong thing. And the company needs to evolve. And it's never, you go through stages and it's never the same again. And every stage requires a different problem to solve that you've never done the way, the thing that used to work in the past doesn't work at that point in time anymore. I think that's a great one to end this with. So thank you very much for sharing the wisdom, for sharing the part of the journey, Aytekin. Where can people go to find out more about JotForm or to say hi to you?
So JotForm is jotform.com, and my website, aytekintank.com, my first name, last name.com. And I write for Forbes, Entrepreneur, Fast Company. You can also, you know, read my writing there. You can read the first free chapter of my book on my website. And that's where you can find me.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. What a pleasure speaking to you.
Thank you, Don.
And this ends my conversation with Aytekin. And I hope you enjoyed it. And if so, please leave a review on iTunes. And if it inspired you, please share it with other tech entrepreneurs on a mission that you have in your network. Other than that, thank you for tuning into this podcast. I had the honor to speak to Aytekin Tank, founder and CEO of JotForm. As said, the goal that I have in this podcast is twofold. Firstly, to inspire new forms of value creation by sharing compelling ideas and stories about the potential we can unlock when technology and people blend in the right way. And secondly, share experiences from tech entrepreneurs like you about what is required to create a remarkable software business and how to overcome the roadblocks to do so. Before I close, I have two more comments to make. If you know other tech entrepreneurs on a mission that have a story worth sharing, please send me an email at ton.dobby@valueinspiration.com. Building the momentum all starts with revealing the ideas. And that starts with you. And if you want to know more about my book, or you're interested in joining the Remarkable Effect tribe, please visit my website at www.valueinspiration.com. Thanks for tuning in. And you could do me a big favor by rating the podcast on iTunes or provide me with your feedback directly. I'll see you shortly on a new episode.